And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Dan Crawford of HammyEnd.com. This episode, we will be looking back at the 1-1 draw for Fulham against Leeds United at Ellen Road. Dan was there, so he will be describing what he saw Tuesday night. Before we do anything, I have to welcome back to the show. It's been a very long time. Welcome back, Dan Crawford.
Thanks for having me, Russ. It's been a very long time. I'm back for my second spell on Cottage Talk. I hope it's going to be a bit better than Chris Baird's second spell at Craven Cottage. And given that he retired from international football this afternoon, I thought it'd be best to give one of our most successful players a little shout out there.
Well, that's great. I'm a huge Chris Baird fan. You know that. And I'm glad that he came back. Unfortunately, it did not work out the second time. Same thing with Clint Dempsey, Dan. It didn't work the second time for whatever reason. But I'm glad when they do come back, make it the second attempt. And I will always think fondly of Chris Baird, so I appreciate the shout-out. All right, my friend. Let's now talk about this match. I'm so excited to talk to you about this. You were there last night. Very interesting match. So let's just get your opening thoughts of what you watched at Ellen Road last night.
It was a very interesting game, Russ. I felt very comfortable for a long, long time. Fulham played very well. It's probably, I'd agree with Slavisa Jokanović, who said it was Fulham's most complete performance of the whole season so far. And the overriding emotion afterwards is of great disappointment that we couldn't hold on to claim those 3 points that would have taken us clear at the top of the table. But once you deal with that, and it does take some dealing with, but you can reflect on a very polished and professional display with a lot of pace and vitality in forward areas, some very encouraging passing, and a lot of positive signs that I'm sure Fulham can build on going forward. It doesn't expunge the crushing disappointment of letting in another late equaliser, but there's plenty to build on.
Absolutely, Dan. And before you and I started this recording, I haven't even told you this. I actually watched the replay, so I got to see it. But again, you're there, so it's a definitely different perspective. So I'm glad that we can talk about this. I'm glad that I watched it, because the one thing that stood out for me, that really, throughout the match, you know, again, Leeds United had their time with the ball. But I thought overall, Dan, we dictated the play. That's the one thing that kept on going back to. We kept on dictating the play. We kept moving the ball all over the place. And it looked extremely organized. The passing looked different than it did last season, Dan. And I agree with Slavisa. I think performance-wise, this was our best performance.
Yeah, I mean, there's little things you can nitpick, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But I felt the midfield gelled quite nicely, and I'm not necessarily sold on playing Scott Parker and Kevin McDonald together.
I agree with you.
I'm very surprised that Parker has played two sets of 90 minutes back to back. I can only assume they've got some sort of aerodynamic air chamber that he lies in at Motspur Park for the rest of the week in order to make sure he's ready for the next fixture. It was extraordinary, and again, Parker was excellent last night. But a British long-standing British journalist called Alan Biggs, Russ, said last night that he hadn't seen a midfield trio like Parker, McDonald and Kearney be so effective in the Championship over the last 2 years. He feels it's the best midfield in the Championship that he's seen.
Wow.
For a while. I wouldn't quite go that far, because these are early signs, but Fulham looked comfortable for much of the game, and that's why it's so disappointing to have only got 1 point rather than three. What I would say is Leeds were average. I saw them play QPR on the first weekend of the season. They weren't much better last night. Gary Monk spoke afterwards saying about how his side deserved the point.
I heard that.
You know, he must have seen some really poor performances if he thinks that that was a team deserving of a point, because they were wretched. And that's what causes me to just temper any optimism that we have about going through this division unchallenged, because they weren't outstanding and will come up against far stronger sides in the future.
No, listen, I totally agree with that, Dan. And I thought we outplayed them, but in the end, it's a point. That's why it is disappointing. But if you asked me before the match, I would have taken a point. So that's where I'm split on this. Definitely disappointing the way that they played to come away with a point. That's why when I say it was their best performance, I'm not talking about the result, because obviously you would rather have the 3 points, and there are things that they're going to have to work on, Dan, especially at the very end of the match, which we'll be talking about, because those are things that you need to fix when you play against better teams. They won't just punish you at the end. They're going to punish you during the match, you know, first half, second half, and at the end of the match as well. So there are things that they need to work on. So definitely not a perfect performance, but there were encouraging signs. I do agree with you. Now, let's transition. Let's talk about the starting 11, because you pointed out something that I was thinking about as well. I was not expecting Scott Parker to play along with Kevin McDonald. What were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11? I actually thought we would see Ryan Tunnicliffe in that position.
Yeah, I think there's a concern about Tunnicliffe's ball retention and his effectiveness playing in that deeper position. You can certainly see why Jokanović prefers McDonald to play there, because he sort of stepped in almost seamlessly into that role. And we dropped off quite substantially once Tunnicliffe came on for the last 10 minutes or so last night. I'm not laying that all at his door by any means, because Leeds were pressing by that point, and it was always going to be the case that Fulham would play deeper. I think the biggest surprise was Ryan Sessegnon coming in on the left side of the defence instead of Scott Malone.
That's true.
To start, and you know, I'm sure we'll talk more about his performance, but for a guy who's 16 and gets his GCSE results tomorrow, he was sensational, Ross. There's one little thing we can pick up with about the goal where you might have to question some of the decision making, but he was excellent for most of the game. Gave Fulham a real outlet down the left hand side, drove forward very effectively, and just looked very composed. He didn't look out of place out there, and justified his selection. Really, and what was interesting is the decision that leaves Jokanović with going into the Cardiff game. Does he play Scott Malone against his old club, or does he stick with Sessegnon? And of course, it's very likely that either of them will be up against our old friend Jazz Richards on that side of the field. And I know it's already nailed on that Jazz Richards will have one of his performances in a Welsh shirt, like how he shepherded Eden Hazard on Saturday. But I think Sessegnon has staked a real claim going forward to be more involved in the first team than perhaps people had first realised.
That's a wonderful point, Dan, and I'm going to be asking you about Sessegnon in just a couple minutes. And it's an interesting situation for Savisa on Saturday. Scott Malone going against his old team. Do you play him? How can you sit Ryan Sessegnon after that performance? It's an interesting dilemma he has, and I'm curious to see how he's going to handle that. But I don't know. You know, if you're asking me, I would play Sessegnon again, Dan. But it'll be interesting to see what Savisa does on Saturday. But let's now get into talking about the match in the first half. And I jotted down just a few things that I wanted to ask you about. Let's start with talking about Ryan Sessegnon, a couple of situations early on, in the 12th minute, His cross leads to a shot by Matt Smith, a header. It went right to green, but again, that was a good positive sign. And then you had in the 19th minute, his cross into the box that Floyd Ayite just missed an opportunity to glance it in. Just missed it. So let's talk about those two situations that both featured Ryan Sessegnon. Dan, what are your thoughts about what he did early on in this match?
I think it encapsulates really what's exciting about Sessegnon and a lot of modern young fullbacks, really, is their game is predicated around offering an offensive option, whereas previously managers were very risk averse, and you were lucky to have your fullback cross the halfway line. I remember back in my younger days, Russ, watching a Fulham fullback called Robbie Herrera, who bore a passing resemblance to the kind of Colombian drug baron you might see in various sort of films and the like. But the standing joke at that time was that Robbie, a very good defender though he was, rarely passed the halfway line. I thought it was a bit unfair because he got forward quite well and he was a successful part of a side that was struggling. But Sessegnon has no problems about going forward. And having been played in midfield by Fulham to some degree in the youth setup, and certainly by England at under 16 and under 17 level, he doesn't get fazed when he enters the penalty area or that final third. And those two crosses that you talked about were absolute gems in terms of delivery. I felt Smith could have done a little bit more with the header, and I thought Ayito had scored, and I think he has to score. In that sort of situation, really. But all of that comes from having a bit of natural wit. You've got Ayite, who's very comfortable playing off his left side, and you've got Sessegnon, very willing to go beyond him. And the interesting thing about that is Stuart Dallas had very little effect on the game down the right side for Leeds, and we know all about
I was very scared. I was very scared about him, Dan. Talk about that. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, we know all about Stuart Dallas from his days playing for the upstarts from Hounslow, Russ, and he didn't affect the game at all. And there's no greater compliment you can pay Sessegnon than that. Actually, he was pushing Dallas back, and I know he got an injury quite early on, but Leeds had to take him off in the second half and change their tactical formation as a result, really, of Sessegnon getting forward so promisingly.
Okay, very good, my friend. Again, this was very encouraging early on, and like I mentioned, I watched the replay before we did this show, and these were two moments that stood out for me. But let's move on. Let's talk about a bad moment, Dan, and I definitely want your view on this. There was a major chance for Leeds in the 27th minute as Antonsen was one-on-one with David Button, but his shot, thankfully, went wide. Fulham definitely got a break here because his shot just went wide, Dan. What went wrong here? What did you see?
Well, I think we'll leave it to the two centre-halves to decide what went wrong, because neither of them were in the right postcode. Mardle and Callas have been excellent for the most part, but unfortunately, from my viewpoint, what happened here was Mardle tried to play the ball to Callas. Callas tried to play the ball to Mardle, who wasn't expecting it, and actually fell over, which was pretty disastrous. It wasn't a great pass either. So Antonsen was straight onto it and threw on goal, and he actually missed a very similar chance for Leeds at Loftus Road in their first game by dragging it wide of the goal. And I thought, somebody they bought in to score goals for them in this league would have tucked that away. But thankfully, as you say, he put it wide, and we breathed again.
Yeah, this was actually very fortunate because easily could have been down 1-0. And looking back at it, I watched it a few times. It was very bad defending, like you said, talking about the center backs who have been very good, not here And Fulham definitely got away with one. There's no question about that. All right, Dan, let's move to the 31st minute. I don't know if you got a good view of this, but I definitely want to get your thoughts about the shout for a penalty as Sonny Aluko was in the box and looked like he was shoved down by Rob Green. Again, I've seen the replay. It's tough to tell from the replay. So I want to get your thoughts on this. Did you get a good view of this?
No, everybody was stood up. And I get to my feet quite slowly. That's before I've had a beer, not afterwards. I didn't get a great view of this. But that being said, it did look like there was contact. I haven't seen a great replay of it. I think I've seen one angle. But, you know, I think here Aluko is a bit too honest for his own good.
I'm glad that you brought that up. Go ahead.
He could definitely have thrown himself to the floor a little bit more convincingly. He sort of went down as an afterthought. And I don't understand, in the position that he was, having conclusively beaten the goalkeeper, why he would have gone down without being touched. Because there was still an opportunity to create something having gone past the goalkeeper. It's not like he was lost control of the ball or anything. But then again, you know, it's one of those ones. There have been several controversial refereeing decisions already. In fact, in all of the matches, certainly all of the league matches this season, and maybe even that second goal at Leighton Orient. So, you know, this happens in the Championship. One referee gives it, one referee doesn't give it. Another referee would probably have booked him for diving, given the standards of the Championship referees. You know, I'm glad the bloke was reasonably close to have a look at it, because that's unusual in the Championship. But, you know, I thought that was a decent shout for a penalty. But fortunately, we didn't lose heart from that, and we had a great chance just shortly afterwards.
Absolutely, and that leads me to ask you about Aluko. But the build-up play here, Dan, was very good leading up to his shot that hit the post. Talk about this situation in the 33rd minute.
Yeah, I think this is what Jokanović wants from his team. Quick possession football, interchanging of the forward players. There was a lovely little back heel from Sessegnon in this move, Russ, that nobody's really talked about. And he sort of just casually backheeled it towards the penalty area. It worked out very nicely. Kearney was involved as well. And unfortunately, I think when you get to this position, and he's what, I'd like to say sort of 9-10 yards out, maybe even a bit closer, he's got to score there, Russ.
Yeah.
And I think he would know it too. He struck it well enough. But the goalkeeper was beaten. And I think that's one of those ones where you put that down as a golden opportunity.
I totally agree. I watched that a few times because I really wanted to get a view of it. But for me, it was all about the passing leading up to it, and he really needs to score there. And unfortunately, he did not. That was a lost opportunity, and very good point by you. All right, my friend. The half ends 0-0, but I just want to share some halftime stats with you and get your thoughts on it if you feel that the stats back up what you watched. So let's start here. This is halftime. Possession, Fulham had 65% to 35% for Leeds. Total shots were 9-3 in favor of Fulham. Both had one on target. Corners, actually, Leeds had more at 4-2. Crosses, Leeds had more at 12-10. Tackles were in favor of them, 9-7. Attempted passes, 320 to 166 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, 139 to 80. This is a very good stat. Passing accuracy, 90% for Fulham and 80% for Leeds United. Accurate passes were 291 to 133 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels were in favor of Leeds United, which actually surprised me a little bit, 11 to 8. And fouls, they had more, 4 to 1. All right, Dan, what do you make of those halftime stats?
Yeah, I'm one of those people who likes statistics, Russ, but only to a certain point, because some of those statistics are largely meaningless. You can put 100 passes together between your back four, go nowhere and you've got 100% completion rate and a lot of passes.
Sure.
I think what's most impressive about this is we went to a very difficult place to play, and I'm sure the full-time statistics, I mean, I saw one stat, I don't know if it's accurate, you'll tell me later on, I'm sure, that we had 61% of the possession over the course of the whole game.
That's correct.
To go to Leeds and dominate them to that sort of degree is a hell of an achievement. And, you know, the composure on the ball, the ease with which we passed the ball, and the fact that every player, actually probably barring Button, who had a couple of nervous moments with the ball at his feet, but every outfield player seemed comfortable on the ball, which is something of a sea change from the previous season, where we seemed very jittery and unsure. That's where we want to get to. And you feel it's still a work in progress because, obviously, the prolificacy of our forward players meant that we were level at the break instead of perhaps having the lead our play deserved. But, that, again, there are plenty of encouraging signs.
Definitely, Dan. And one thing that stood out to me, I'm listening to Gentleman Jim and Jamie Reed, and Jamie Reed said something that I'm curious your thoughts on. He said he felt that Fulham were playing like the home team. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I don't. These concepts of what a home team should do and shouldn't do, I'm not sure they apply in a league as bizarre, frankly, as the Championship. You've got to remember Leeds are very low on confidence in front of what can be a very hostile but boisterous and enthusiastic home crowd. So the way the game was set up, I think Leeds were probably looking to spring attacks on Fulham rather than to dominate from the get-go. They selected a very attacking side in order to maximise the amount of time they get in forward positions. So I think it was down to that, really. But, yeah, you didn't feel like we were in the wayside coming under a barrage of pressure, probably until the last sort of 10 or 12 minutes. So in that respect, I'd agree with the commentators on that one.
Yeah, it was very interesting to hear that during the match. And I'm glad that you mentioned the last 10 minutes for Leeds, because I saw an interview with Gary Monk afterwards, and he was proud of his team about basically talking about those last 10 minutes that they were fighting to the end, and I could see his point. But we'll focus, obviously, more on Fulham. Let's move to the second half, and let's talk about what happened in the 50th minute. Matt Smith hits the woodwork off of a corner. But then this starts, though, with Ryan Sessegnon had a shot on target right before that. Let's talk about this whole scenario. Talk to me what you saw here.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was the kind of exuberance, really, that Fulham are playing with. And, you know, it wasn't so long ago that we'd be quite astonished that a Fulham player would have a shot from outside the box. You know, it was a rarity. So that's encouraging. I have to say, this is another one where Matt Smith will probably think he should have scored from the corner. You'd think Leeds would know all about his ability and threat in the air, and yet he's wandered in there, got away from his man quite easily. It's as close to a free header as you're going to get. And he'll feel like he should have put that away. And given that we'd hit the other post in the first half, you get the sense that if you take these sort of half chances, the game might well be over by that point, Russ. And you're not having to worry too much about being punished for one defensive lapse, as we eventually were.
No, very good point. You know, when you don't take advantage of your opportunities, it could come back to bite you, and this is a perfect example of it, Dan. We're just talking about two, and there were a few other half chances as well. You had in the 55th minute, Floyd Iyite taking a shot from distance. But as the match went on, you know, I still felt that the goal was coming, Dan. I thought that we had done enough to eventually it was going to pay off with the goal, and we got it in the 77th minute. And I actually had someone send me a video clip of this because I wanted to see this. And it really was a phenomenal goal by Tom Kearney, who I think is just getting better and better, Dan. I think the sky's the limit with him. I don't think we have even really scratched the surface with his ability. I think we're just starting to see it because he's not in the shadow of Ross McCormack anymore. He can be the player that I think he's going to be. So talk about this goal by Tom Kearney in the 77th minute.
Yeah, I have to say, for a start, I didn't share your confidence that we were going to score, Ross.
Okay.
Maybe that's because I'm more pessimistic by nature. I'm not necessarily sure that that's accurate either. But I just felt that having missed the chances, you know, it was the game had entered quite a cagey period just before then, and you wondered where the opportunity was going to come from. What I would say is there was an excellent run by Corley Woodrow that wins the free kick in a promising position. And I was surprised that Aluko sort of commandeered the situation from the free kick. I'd have thought Kearney might have been interested in taking the free kick himself. But Aluko rather wastes the free kick and it comes out to the right. I think it's McDonald who plays it to Kearney. And actually, there's a video on the Fulham website this afternoon where Kearney, amongst other things, speaks about the goal and says that he doesn't look at the goal because he knows where the goal is. He knows where the goalkeeper is, and his concentration is on getting that half a yard by rolling the defender. We've seen this sort of finish from him before, that it's, you know, we almost expect him to pull something out like this. What I will say about Kearney is he scored 8 goals last season, and that's one area of his play that he needs to improve upon in terms of scoring more goals, because he's certainly capable of it. He does
Absolutely.
Like playing at Elland Road though, Russ. He's got a historical link to Leeds, obviously as a boyhood fan, and having been released by them as a 16-year-old for being too small. So he scored on his last two visits there, and they were both brilliant goals. And it was a wonderful finish. Just what we expect of Kearney and his quality. I do think he benefits from not necessarily McCormack going. I think that's overplayed slightly. I think what's more
okay.
beneficial to Kearney is having the dual shields of Parker and McDonald in the midfield, which means he's not being caught in those deeper areas and he can go and express himself. And in this system, interchanging with Aite and Aluko to go wide and come centrally, he has more of a remit
freedom.
To go and influence the game. So that's why perhaps we're seeing more of Kearney in the first couple of weeks of the season than we did previously.
No, that's a very good point, Dan. And let's go back to me talking about that I was feeling that the goal would come, not from really like an overall build-up play, because, like you said, it got very cagey. It was more that they've had their opportunities, and I thought that they would at least have one or two more. That's kind of where I was going on. I just felt that they were going to get another opportunity, and eventually it was going to fall for them. It did, but I understand where you're coming from, because they missed these golden opportunities. So you're thinking, well, it's not going to happen for us because we blew our opportunities already. Does that make sense where I'm coming from compared to where you're coming from on that?
Yeah, I mean, I just felt that the game was at a point where managers could easily settle for a draw. I don't think that's Jokanović's style. I think he wants
right.
to go and win the game. And he did so by, he showed that by taking off Smith and bringing on Woodrow to try and change it up front. But if anything, I could see a lead sucker punch coming before we scored to punish us for not taking our opportunities. Evidently, it came after we'd scored and made us feel just as bad, really, as things turned out.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in just a second. Yeah, the sucker punch at the end is pretty bad, Dan, and I definitely want you to describe it. Unfortunately, I'm asking you to describe it because it was pretty bad. I've watched it several times. But like you mentioned earlier on, Leeds United, after the goal, they were pressing Fulham, and they were really pushing hard for that goal, which did come in stoppage time. This was a bicycle kick by Chris Wood. I just want you to describe what went wrong here for Fulham, unfortunately, and we left Elland Road with only 1 point and just a few minutes away from getting all 3 points. So let's talk about the equalizer for Leeds, unfortunately.
Yeah, the sort of classic mad goal you get in a championship. I think Jukanovic said something very similar in his press conference. Forward ball, the centre half Bartley flicks it on, it bounces, and you know what they say about centre halves, don't let the ball bounce in your box. We didn't attack it, and Woods, who, to be quite honest, had a pretty dreadful game, and he's not popular amongst the Leeds fans. Scores a really good bicycle kick. Now, I've read and heard plenty of criticism about this goal. And we can do that if you want, Russ, as to whether Sessegnon or somebody should have put their head in there, which is the first thing that comes to mind, because then the bicycle kick could be ruled foul play or dangerous play by the referee at the very least, and you could have prevented him from doing that. In Sessegnon's case, I think that's something that comes with game time and experience of senior football. I'm not sure who was meant to be picking up the Bartley, whose telling contribution was to flick it forward. Tannacliffe was in the vicinity, but didn't get close to anybody. Our two commanding centre-halves who'd headed away everything to previously were a little lax on this occasion. And I even had somebody saying to me that Button could have done better with the finish itself. You can apportion blame any way you want. There's plenty to go around. It's a poor goal to concede,
right,
defensively, and I'm sure Jukanovic won't be happy about it. The ironic thing, of course, is Wood have missed a very simple chance, seemingly at the back post, in normal time, just a little bit earlier on, and he ran away after scoring, cupping his ear to the cop behind the goal in a way that's eerily reminiscent of a former Fulham striker, Russ. I don't know if you
noticed.
I won't name him. I think everyone's pretty sure of who I'm talking about. And it was disappointing, you know, because we've put so much effort in and, you know, a lot has been made of about how much stronger we are at the back, which is certainly true. This was just one of those moments. And when teams are firing in balls like that and getting desperate in injury time, it can happen. It doesn't make it any easier to take, unfortunately.
No, it doesn't, Dan. And like you said, you can blame several people, but I'm glad that you brought up Ryan Sessegnon, because I've watched this and you could see that. And you brought up something that I was thinking about after I watched this. He's going to learn from this, Dan. This comes from playing more. It comes from experience. So it's unfortunate that it happened, but I think he will learn from that. I think they're all going to learn from it. But yes, it was a poor goal. It was a horrible way to end this match for Fulham, because you know, you kind of get what you deserve, you know, in a match. You know, it's difficult for me to say, Dan, well, you know, we should have gotten all 3 points, because, you know, it still says 1-1. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter that I think that they played well. The result ultimately is what matters. It's the 1-1 draw, Dan. But I can't ignore the performance here. I can't ignore it, though. And that, to me, is a day later is what I'm left with. I'm left with thinking, yeah, we dropped 2 points, but the performance was good to the point where Jokanović is saying out of the three, this is the best performance he's seen from a Fulham team. So it's a difficult way to end, Dan, but I can take a lot of positives, and you've already said that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the other thing to take from this is Jokanović won't tolerate those sort of defensive errors. I'm not saying any manager
exactly.
is happy when his team concedes goals like that, but you know, this will be drilled into them over the next couple of days on the training ground, and it's a timely reminder of what life is like in the Championship. Kearney said something in his post-match interview that he felt for 80 minutes or so Fulham had given Leeds a footballing lesson, which I didn't quite agree with, but it was an interesting turn of phrase, because actually I think what happened is last night Fulham, after two victories and quite a bit of confidence, had a harsh reminder of the realities of Championship football, in that it doesn't matter how impressive your football and your passing, your approach to play and your fluency is, you can still be punished right at the end and go home with 1 point when you had a justifiable claim for all three. That's the nature of football. You know, some people will say that this team bottled it at the end like that by switching off defensively. I think it's too early to make judgments about players' character so early into the season. The astounding thing for me is that we're coming away from a game at Elland Road, a tough place to go now, with 7 points from the first three games, and there's a palpable sense of disappointment amongst the Fulham fan base with 7 points from three games, which to me is a symbol of how far we've come since the start of the season, really. When you think that at the start of the season, people were worried about losing McCormack, they're worried about the squad, and there are still some real questions that we have to ask about, you know, the extent of the overhaul that Jokanović is going to be allowed to undertake on what is a very threadbare squad, and there certainly needs to be more additions. Last night will have helped him if he's still having discussions with Shahid Khan, or indeed Tony Khan, who was at the game last night, I understand, about what acquisitions he has to make. But we do have to place into context that start, because you said something earlier that, you know, you'd have been pleased with a point prior to kickoff. I think most Fulham fans would have taken a point prior to kickoff. It's the manner of how that point came about in the end that leaves a bitter taste in the mouth, shall we say.
No, I understand that, because it definitely leaves a bitter taste. What's interesting, Dan, before we go to the full-time stats, I want to get your thoughts on this, because I've talked about this on Cotter's Talk. I wanted to see how this team would respond from a loss, from a bad loss. I've said this. You know, you can learn a lot about a team the next match, the next few matches, how they respond. It's the reaction to the loss. Well, here's an opportunity. It's not a loss, but you give up a late goal in a match where, you know, if you think about it, maybe you should have won. You didn't. You only got a point. So for me, Dan, I'm going to be very interested to see the reaction in the Cardiff match, because you can actually use this as motivation going into that match. So I know what you're saying. We're going to have to see how their character builds over the course of the season. But this is a very interesting moment going into the Cardiff match, the reaction. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're going to get setbacks over the course of any season. And it's not just in football, in life, how you respond to adversity and a disappointment is telling about character and how you approach things. I just think this is an opportunity for Fulham to lay down a marker.
I agree.
Going into that Cardiff game, you look at it, you look at the start that we've had, and by contrast with the Newcastle game and the expectations that are around that, there will be a heightened sense of expectation, and Fulham will be expected by our fans to beat Cardiff on Saturday. And I think that plays into a broader narrative about if you want to get stronger in this league and be competitive, you have to win your home games and be difficult to beat away from home. And coming from where we were last season, that's a huge undertaking because we were generous to our opponents, far too generous, Russ, in our own box, for starters. So we have to improve on both of those things. And Saturday is an opportunity. Cardiff play tonight in a tricky game, and they haven't had a straightforward start to the season by any means. So they will be raring to go. And it's a good test of where we are. Can we cope with the heightened expectations? Can we, as you say, set that disappointment aside and use it as a motivating factor? They're all good questions, and we'll have some answers come Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. And what's interesting, Dan, you're talking about Cardiff playing tonight. They're playing Blackburn, who Fulham will be playing in a very short period of time as well. So that's a very interesting match if anyone's interested to check out. I don't know if it's on. It's probably not on. But that's one to really look at, that Cardiff City-Blackburn match, because these are two future opponents of Fulham. So I'm looking forward to this because I want to see the response. It's a great opportunity. And like you said, Dan, if we want to really progress in this league, you have to win your home matches. And this is a wonderful opportunity to do that, to show, to lay down the mark, like you said. So we'll see what happens. All right, let's go to full-time stats. I want to get your thoughts on the full-time stats. We've already talked about the possession. It was 61% to 39% in favor of Fulham. Total shots in favor of Fulham, 21 to 15. On target, we're in favor of Leeds, 4-3. Corners, they were way ahead here at 9-4. Crosses, they had more, 26-20. Tackles were even at 16. Attempted passes, 597 to 365. Attacking passes, 282 to 164. Passing accuracy, again, 90-81 in favor of Fulham. So that passing accuracy stayed true throughout the match. Accurate passes, 539 to 297. Successful aerial duels in favor of Leeds United, 20-13, and fouls 9-4. More fouls for Leeds United. All right, Dan, you already talked about the possession being something that interests you because you said 61% and it was 61%. That stands out. What other parts of the statistics stands out to you in this match, full time?
The shots on target, Ross, because for all our play and our dominance territorially, Leeds have more shots on target than Fulham. And given the balance of play, that's criminal. You have to test the goalkeeper in this league, especially when it's a goalkeeper of the quality of Rob Green, you know, who, let's be honest about it, is past his prime and, you know, normally concedes quite a few goals against Fulham. I thought I'd just get that one in. But the thing for me is this highlights the genesis of Slavisa Kanovic's argument here, which is that he needs more reinforcements. He certainly needs more strikers, as well as Matt Smith has done, and as well as Cordy Woodrow played at Brisbane Road last week. You're going to need more in the forward areas in order to sustain a promotion push, and I hope that the powers that be at Fulham are not even paying attention to what has been in the press in terms of Vukanovic's quotes, and actually acting to bring in players. I know it's a difficult time in the window to make that happen, but not, you know, to have dominated the game to such a degree and yet not really tested the opposition goalkeeper. I can't remember him having to make too many outstanding saves. I think there's one from Aite in the second half that springs to mind. and the other two chances really hit the post, aside from the fine finish from Kenny. And if you had more of a potent threat in the box, it might have changed things. It may not, of course, but I think it makes a broader point for us, which is we're all worried about the number of goals that have gone out of the squad over the summer, and the caliber of forwards that we currently have to pick from.
It's a very good point, Dan. I'm glad that you brought that up, because after the match, I saw much of this on social media, and I'm not going to disagree with any of it. I think we need a proven striker, a proven goal scorer, maybe two of them, to really set us farther upon the path where Savica wants us to go. He needs more reinforcements than just strikers, but I agree with you, and I think that stat does show that out a little bit. Matt Smith is... does a job. He does his job. Sonny Aluko does his job. These players are doing their job, but they need someone that is a proven goal scorer. I think Colley Woodrow will score goals for us, but we need someone that you can really count on to score goals for us. And I think the shots on target really talk to that, Dan. Very good point by you to mention that. All right, my friend, let's move on. I want to get your thoughts on this. We do rate the players. I'll give you the option here. Would you like to rate the players, or would you just like to just say a few words on each player?
I don't. I know there's a very successful social media rate the players run by my good friend and your good friend, Mike Gregg.
Does a great
job.
So
I'll leave him to... I'm sure he's either crunching the numbers at the moment, or he's already done it and I've missed it.
Okay.
But obviously... people have the opportunity to rate the players out of 10 via his SurveyMonkey, I think it is. Other surveying organisations are available. What I will say is there's nobody you can pick out for excessive criticism. It was so close to the perfect away performance, going to a tough Northern Championship ground on a Tuesday night. Not something we do with particular success as Fulham, and we came very close to going away with all 3 points. So I wouldn't like to pick out anybody for criticism. There's a couple of people who really impressed, and that's obvious from what we've talked about. I think you need to look at Sessegnon, Kenny, and probably McDonald as well for their composure and their contributions throughout the game, but I wouldn't like to elevate people above the overall team level, because the work ethic and commitment was outstanding and the quality of the football was excellent. So I'd leave it there. I would just say, in response to your previous point as well though, Russ, is you're getting towards the kind of time in the window where people will be starting to make assessments about Shahid Khan and how much he's behind the manager. The whispering is already going on. It's in the newspapers. It's on the message boards. And we don't know how well-informed any of that speculation is. I'm not close enough to the football club to cast any light on any of that. But you have a young, hungry manager who knows what it takes to get out of this league. And he needs to be backed in the transfer market, especially after taking in such a big fee for Ross McCormack. I hope he will be, and I hope he gets the opportunity to bring in strikers. All I would say is, you said you might need one proven goal scorer, maybe two. I think you certainly need two strikers. And like you said, there are probably other areas where you'd want to strengthen as well. But I just think if it's my first contribution for some time, that's important to note. You know, there are sections of the fan base who have written off Shahid Khan completely. There are sections of the fan base who won't hear any criticism of him. It's natural that you have divergent views. But I think we are approaching an acid test in terms of that position now.
Dan? Excellent point, and I'm there with you on that. I'm glad that you have brought this to the table, and we're talking about it now, because there's still time left in the window, and I've said this, that I will make my final assessment after the window closes. But yes, time is starting to dwindle down. And Shad Khan, Slavisa Jokanović, Mike Rigg, Ali Mack, they have a job in front of them to get the players, because, again, Slavisa's going to be part of the decision-making process, I'm assuming, to bring in more players. I think I agree with him. I think he needs four or five more players. And I will be very disappointed if they do not spend all of that McCormack money. And as I heard a quote from Slavisa say, and more. Whatever it takes, whatever it takes, I hope that they get the players that he needs. Maybe it's done through different ways, like through loan deals. But that money should be spent, Dan. It should be reinvested back in the club. And if we're sitting here at the beginning of September and it has not been done like that, like the whole Moussa Dembele debacle, I'm talking about the original Moussa Dembele, I'm going to be one ticked-off supporter in the U.S. And I'll be pointing the finger at everyone, including Shad Khan. So this is a huge litmus test for them. They've spent money before. He spent money before. But this is an opportunity to take a team that could be a good team to potentially a very good team. But, Dan, the head coach needs reinforcements.
Yeah, I think I don't really have anything to add. It's clear that there needs to be strengthening of the squad for no other reason than it's not strong enough just in weight of numbers at the moment.
Absolutely.
You know, to sustain any kind of competitive challenge, because you're going to get people who are going to get injured. And you have questions about the depth of the resources that are at his disposal in terms of quality as well. How often can Fulham conjure up these kind of displays of real quality in such a short space of time, you know, with the games Saturday, Tuesday. But, you know, people know about this. The people who know football know how difficult a league the Championship is, and they also know how highly regarded somebody like Slavisa Jokanović is and what impact he could have on a squad. So, look, we'll leave that there. It's just the closing moments of injury time might have thrown that into sharper focus for people watching, that's all.
Yeah, and I understand that. And listen, you know, I like to judge by what has happened. So the job isn't done yet for the transfer window. And if they come through, if everyone does their job, I'm talking about everyone, not just Shad Khan. He pays the bills. He gives them the money. If they bring in the proper people, the players that Slavisa needs to win, I'm going to be happy. If he doesn't, then I'm not going to be happy. It's as simple as that. This is an opportunity, Dan. They have a very good opportunity here to do something potentially special, but they need more players to do that. And like you said, just the numbers-wise, but this guy has high ambition, Dan. I've said this before. I don't think Slavisa wants top six. I think he wants automatic promotion. I think that's where his ambition is. I know it sounds crazy to say with Fulham, but I think that's where he wants us to be. He wants to get promoted this season, and I think he needs players, and he's letting it known. And I definitely understand why he's going there. All right, Dan, we only have 6 minutes left. Before we finish up, I do want to mention that Dan has written some excellent articles about this match, so please do go to hamian.com. I want to end with really just talking about one article, Dan, just a couple minutes, because I really enjoyed your article on Ryan Sessegnon. So just tell everyone a little bit about what you wrote about him from the match last night and just in general on the player.
Well, I think there's a lot of interest in Ryan, largely because he's come through Fulham's youth setup, and so it's always good for fans to have younger players coming through from the club and sharing those same roots, if you like. And he'd had a very encouraging pre-season, which I think suggested he was further ahead on the path to regular senior football than perhaps people had anticipated. Has to be said, he's been excellent in youth team football for England for best part of 2 or 3 years now. And it's been really encouraging to see him break through into the first team. Firstly, with that, with those games in the pre-season, and particularly for most of us, obviously the game against Crystal Palace before the start of the season. And he's probably unlucky to get injured when he did, Russ, because I think he would have probably had a very good chance of starting against Newcastle. So to see him step into that environment last night and look unfazed against a really good player, as we've talked about, I think there are just a couple of things, really. I wrote an article previously after he played at Leighton Orient, talking about how good it was to see so many youngsters come in to that game, and most of them looked perfectly at home, and that's a testament to the work that Alistair McIntosh, for one, Steve Wigley, Hugh Jennings and Malcolm Elias have done at the football club to create those pathways and to create a strong youth setup, but also about Ryan's own maturity. You know, it's easy to say that he's a young starlet and, you know, he's got everything in front of him and a great future because he has, but that's rather glib. It's all down on the player dealing with the expectation and dealing with the new environment that he's put in and producing the goods, and he certainly did that last night. The one thing I will say is, you know, you've got bigger clubs coming in and casting glances, envious glances at Sessegnon and maybe trying to lure him away. This is not new. We had this with Arsenal last year in terms of interest in Ryan, and they tried to get him and were unsuccessful. So you've seen the most linked interest is with Tottenham at the moment. But I felt it was interesting how Jurcanovic dealt with that afterwards, in saying that he doesn't want to place too much pressure on the young boy by talking about him. He just wants him to focus on his football. And I would say that's the lesson, because Tottenham's been the graveyard for a lot of young Fulham talent in the past. And Ryan has had a good start, doesn't need to get carried away. He won't. I know he's a very composed character. He's very excited to be playing for Fulham, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. And very, very interesting article. I definitely recommend you reading all of Dan's articles on handman.com. It's a great website. Dan does an excellent job, along with the other writers. My friend Lydia does an excellent job as well. It's always good to see an article from Lydia, so shout out to Lydia. I do also have someone that wanted to say something to you, Dan, before we wrap this up. Our friend Niall, when you and I met, we went to the Reading match, actually messaged me and said, please say hi to Dan. So that's for you, Dan.
It's very kind of Niall to offer his greetings. I remember with great fondness that afternoon at Reading.
That was fun,
again,
yeah.
Probably more fondness of the social occasion than the end of the football match.
Yeah.
But we've spoken enough about conceding goals in injury time for one show, haven't we?
Oh yeah. Let's not go back and talk about that match. Anyways, it is time to wrap up the show, Dan. It's been way too long, my friend. It really was enjoyable just talking to you today, so thank you.
Cheers, Russ. Been a pleasure.
Okay, and just want to mention, Dan, just please, once again, please do check out Dan Crawford on handman.com, and hopefully we'll get Dan back soon, but that's going to do this for this episode of Cottage Talk. For Dan Crawford, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Dan. Have a great night.
Thank you. Boys.